K-Mud Podcast presents.
Greetings. Welcome to Talking Trash, our plastic catastrophe, where we talk your trash, my trash, our trash, and how all that plastic is trashing our planet and all its living things. I'm your host, Lois Cordova. So one of the most shocking plastic stories that came out this last month, it might not be so shocking to those of us that are following this twisty, turny story of all things plastic. But anyway, news outlets, lots of them, covered some University of New Mexico Health Sciences researchers that found microplastics in human brains. Not only that, but it was a much higher concentration than in any other organs. Worse, the plastic accumulation appears to be growing over time. It's increased by 50% over just the last 8 years. They say the human brain may contain up to a spoon's worth of tiny plastic shards. Now, that's not a spoonful, but the same weight as a single-use throwaway plastic spoon. That's about 7 grams. This research was published about 2 weeks ago in the journal called Nature Medicine. And initially, the study analyzed samples of brain, liver, and kidney tissues from 28 people who died in 2016 and 2024 in New Mexico. Oh, I'm sorry, 24 people that died in 2024. Microplastic concentration was much higher in the brain tissue. It was also higher in the brain and liver samples from 2024 deaths compared with the people that had died in 2016. The researchers said plastic concentrations in the brain appeared higher than in the liver or the kidney and higher than previous reports that showed concentrations in placentas and testes. Now, the scientists then extended the analysis with brain tissue samples from people who died between 1997 and 2013, and those people were all from the East Coast. The U.S. East Coast. The data showed an increasing trend in microplastic contamination of brains from 1997 to 2024. Study co-author, neuroscientist Andrew West, characterized the levels of microplastics and nanoplastics in the brains of human cadavers as, quote, almost unbelievable. Their analysis found the amount of microplastics in the human brain appears to be increasing over time, and that concentrations rose by roughly 50% between 2016 and 2024. They note the rate of accumulation mirrors the increasing amounts of plastic waste on the planet. Co-author and research team leader, toxicologist Matthew Campin said, quote, "This really changes the landscape. It makes it so much more personal." Additionally, they observed that much of the plastic appears to be much smaller than they previously appreciated. It's in the nanometer scale. It's about 2 to 3 times the size of viruses, they said. The study also revealed that brain tissue from people who'd been diagnosed with dementia had up to 10 times as much plastic in their brains as everyone else that hadn't been diagnosed with dementia. Now, they said that's a really clear correlation, but the study design wasn't able to show whether higher levels of plastic in the brain caused the dementia symptoms or if brains experiencing dementia accumulate more due to other disease processes. They asserted, quote, "Given the exponentially rising environmental presence of micro and nanoplastics, this data compels a much larger effort to understand whether they have a role in neurological disorders or other human health effects, end quote. Now, the technique that was used by the researchers detected and quantified 12 different polymers, the most common of which was polyurethane. That's the stuff that's mostly widely used, as we know, for packaging and containers, including bottles and cups. Polyethylene made up 75% of the total plastic that was identified in the samples. So they also used transmission electron microscopy so they could visually examine the tissue samples that had had those high polymer concentrations. And they found clusters of what they called sharp plastic shards measuring 20 nanometers or less. And once again, they said that's just not much larger than viruses. These small, sharp plastic shards are so small they can, and they have, we now know, crossed the blood-brain barrier. Campin said it remains unclear how of the particles actually being transported into the brain. The revelation in the study provokes many more questions. It's unclear what effects, which is considered to be biologically inert. Plastic is used in medical applications like heart stents and artificial joints. And so he said it's just unclear what effects that it's having. He said the physical characteristics of the particles may be the real problem, that they're these little sharp shards, as opposed to the source being, giving some chemical toxicity. He said, quote, "We start thinking that maybe these plastics obstruct blood flow in capillaries." He said there's the potential that these nanomaterials interfere with the connections between axons in the brain. They could also be a seed for aggregation of proteins involved in dementia. We just don't know, end quote. So there's that notable upward trend in contamination with much higher levels of microplastics in the 2024 brain tissues on average than in the 2016 brain tissue, regardless of the patient's age, sex, race, ethnicity, or cause of death. Oh, they left the mic open in the studio. So that part, that, that the contamination was different regardless of what the anything else was with the individual's brain that they were researching. They said that suggested microplastic levels in the brain have grown by 50% over 8 years, and that the increase makes sense in the context of plastic production, which that doubles every 10 to 15 years, they've noted. He suspects that most of the microplastics in the body are ingested through food, suggesting that it's particularly through meat, because commercial meat production tends to concentrate plastics in the food chain. Campin said, "We think the increase is simply mirroring the environmental buildup in exposure. People are being exposed to ever increasing levels of micro and nanoplastics." He went on, he said, "The way we irrigate fields with plastic contaminated water, we postulate the plastic buildup there. We feed those crops to our livestock. We take the manure and put it back on the field. So there may be a sort of feed forward biomagnification," end quote. He said the team had found high concentrations of plastic in meat bought in grocery stores, he'd added while he was talking. Microplastics tend to accumulate in fat cells in the brain's insulating myelin sheath, and that wraps around the neurons and helps to regulate signal transmissions. Remember, it's electrical stuff going on in our brains. That, in turn, might help explain the higher concentrations of plastic in the brain, they've suggested. He apparently often cites the toxicologist's maxim, "Dose makes the poison." And he says the new results should give rise to alarm about a global threat to human health. I mean, we don't know what it's doing to us. It's clearly increasing. He acknowledges it can be hard to motivate consumers who often shrug when warned about environmental contaminants that tend to be measured in parts per billion. But remember, microplastics and nanoplastics are minuscule plastic fragments that get into our environment and into us from the breakdown of the everyday objects like packaging, containers, clothing, tires, you name it. And also remember that nanoplastics and microplastics have, we know this, spread all over the planet, from Mount Everest to the Mariana Trench. There's been lots of other studies we've talked about, some of them, about plastic being in our blood, baby poop, lungs, placentas, testes, breast milk. It's ubiquitous, and it is, that is noted in virtually every study at this point. And like last September, a study released showing these miniature pollutants were discovered in the human olfactory bulb. Now, that's a type of brain tissue that sits above the nose in the forebrain. At that time, researchers in that study weren't completely sure whether microplastics could migrate deeper in the brain. Here we are, 4 short months later, and this new research shows that migration of micro and nanoplastics into our brains does and has occurred in mind-boggling quantities. Whew! So that story was covered by lots of mainstream media, as I said, and also lots of not-so-mainstream media. And I even bumped into a story about it like on MSNBC, one of my rare TV experience moments. So if you want to learn more, I encourage you always, go find the stories. You can even go find the study yourself and read all these details that I absolutely do not have time to bring to you this evening. It's quite the finding. So I'm going to do a little dot connecting, I guess, because there's a really broad array of things going on around us at the moment. And I'm going to bring you some of my, I guess, my musings and meanderings, as it were. And we will get back to plastic, I promise. This all has to do in oblique and sometimes direct ways. So I'm seeing a stage set for calamities. So last month we talked about the hazardous toxic wasteland left behind after those Southern California wildfires that were last, just this last January, outside of fire season, no less. And I think we mostly talked about the Palisades and Eaton fires. Those were the biggest ones. And those moved really rapidly into highly populated communities. Totally burned out the homes, the businesses, all the stuff in them. We noted then that wildfires aren't staying in the forest anymore. And it creates this toxic soup that is left behind that is so much worse for us in the air and the water and, oh, everything that plain old wildfire smoke, which is toxic in its own way to humans and other critters, it is just so much worse when we start adding into it the contents of the makeup of our homes and properties and the stuff we use. So we talked about how all that rain would take the toxic soup even further, and the rains have come, along with the debris flows that we expected from the burned areas. So it's now moved that toxic slurry farther and wider across the landscape, into other people's homes, into other yards, across other roads, into other parts, and of course, always into the waterways and the seas. And amazingly, I'm not seeing a lot of attention being paid other than, oh, we got to clean this mess up. So the EPA is trying to get all that stuff cleaned up. And they're just like moving along at breakneck speeds. But no one wants the hazardous waste. So the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency began the first phase of the fire debris cleanup on January 28th. And they began removing hazardous materials such as paint, cleaners, solvents, pesticides, lithium ion batteries, and asbestos burn area. So they've been transporting all the hazardous materials to temporary staging areas. There's a couple of different places for each of the two big fires. And the debris at those places is then going to be sorted. And what they say is it will be secured and packaged for transport to permitted disposal facilities. Now, I haven't been able to ascertain what those end-game disposal facilities are. I found some of their locations were interesting. There was a golf course and a park and a beach and an old hotel. So those are their sorting areas. Residents and leaders from all over Los Angeles County and all these foothill communities are raising all kinds of concerns about the health and environmental risks that could be posed at those sorting facilities. The EPA says that they will take steps to ensure safety, including air quality monitoring, the use of a water truck to suppress dust and emissions, and continued environmental testing of the site after it closes. My sense is that local concerns are not quelled by all of this reassurance, because now, like, there's stage two, and that began yesterday, I think. And so Saturday, there was dozens of people gathered outside the Calabas landfill in Agoura Hills, and they were there to protest the plans to dump up to, beginning today or yesterday, 5,000 tons of debris per day as part of the massive cleanup operation. That landfill is one of at least seven non-hazardous waste landfills in Southern California that have been approved, and I don't know by whom, to accept stage two waste, including, this is a list that I saw in a couple of different articles, chimneys, hazardous trees, and fire debris and ash from this latest cleanup phase. This is stage two. I wasn't able to find specified what, quote, fire debris is exactly. Like, does it include furniture, carpets, siding? What's in that ash? Couldn't find any of that explicit information. Los Angeles County Supervisor Lindsay Horvath's office said the use of the landfill for fire debris is within federal government's authority, not the county's, and where the debris is disposed of is up to the Army Corps of Engineers. That's totally out of local anybody's hands, even state. A statement from her office read in part, "Our communities deserve transparent and comprehensive information on fire debris disposal. I understand our residents' concern, which is why I have called on our federal and state partners who hold the authority for fire debris removal to share their plan with the public, including timelines, hauling routes, and safety practices." So I think clearly that hasn't all been communicated yet, or we wouldn't be having the protests. There's many concerned citizens and communities all over the area. And this cleanup and the disposal is the topic of town hall meetings, protests, city council meetings. I mean, try looking it up on the internet, and there's just dozens and dozens of articles about all kinds of community issues that are being had with the cleanup process. So here's another one of those dots, I guess I'll call them, that I'm stringing together here. So I'm sure you heard about the massive employee purges across government agencies. And one of them that caught my eye very explicitly has to do with fires that we were just talking about. The U.S. Forest Fire Service is firing about 3,400 recent fires, while the National Park Service is terminating about 1,000 workers. This is all under the push to cut federal spending and bureaucracy without any consideration of who does what, where, and why. This purge is targeting employees who are in their probationary employment periods, usually the first year, and that makes them easier to just let go. However, even those procedures have apparently not been followed. It represents about 10% of Forest Service workforce and about 5% of the National Park Service employees. Now, they say it excludes firefighters, law enforcement, and certain meteorologists, as well as some seasonal workers from the cutbacks. However, there is simultaneously a hiring freeze. This is exactly the time when seasonal employees would be beginning applications, onboarding, and training. Staffing levels are already not keeping pace with increasing demands. There's more people that visit all of our national parks and forests every year. And I read in one article, a ranger said, visitors from around the world expecting a once-in-a-lifetime experience can now be faced with overflowing trash, unclean bathrooms, and fewer rangers to provide guidance. I don't remember what article I got that from. I'm sorry. Then there's also the federal funding freeze, which is affecting programs, which they are meant to mitigate wildfire risk in Western states, as well as freezing the hiring of these seasonal firefighters. So an example of the funding freeze craziness and the counterproductivity thereof is the Loma, I can't even pronounce it, it's a restoration project. And it's a non-profit that contracts with federal agencies, including the U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management. And they reduce hazardous fuels in Oregon, California, and Idaho. Well, their projects, funds, everything has been frozen. The list of frozen projects all across the West is long, and we've essentially deleted an entire season of prevention work. Democrats have called on the administration to unlock the fire mitigation funding in a vast interior and agriculture to exempt seasonal firefighters from the hiring freeze, but those pleas have all gone unanswered. Advocacy groups are saying that their members are unable to hire the hundreds of firefighters that are typically brought on at this time of the year to do a lot of the mitigation projects. They said the agencies already have had a recruitment and retention problem, and that this just exacerbates that ongoing problem. So let's bring this a little closer to home. About 34% of Humboldt County is in public ownership. That includes tribal lands, which they just lump it all together and say federal land. But we know that the tribes don't have that much of the land. So that's about 34% of the county is in federal lands. And those are mostly national forests, national parks, and Bureau of Land Management. There are 800 federal employees here in Humboldt, according to EDD. We will presume that most of those local folks work for the Forest Service, National Parks, and BLM, which means that just looking at 10%, about 80 people lose their jobs. And these are the important jobs of caretaking the federal lands that are around us, including the upkeep and maintenance of roads that some of us live on, trails and amenities throughout our surrounding communities, and dealing with the people-wildlands interface. That's, hey, you can't chop down that tree. Hey, you can't start a fire there. Hey, no fireworks. The people that help keep the rules and keep us at least a little safe. It's also the people that are the immediate responders to fires, the people that are the immediate rescuers, all those people there's going to be a lot of them gone. So it's not only our federal lands employees, there's work on environmental and earth sciences are stopped, right dead in their tracks, with staff told to flag work that includes a long list of suddenly prohibited words and phrases, even where those words and phrases are explicitly requested by the federal granting agency. A couple of days ago, I saw a researcher that I follow on Blue Sky say she's really worried that her organization will lose the recently awarded NOAA Collaborative National Sea Grant that's focused on pollution mitigation. That's microfibers, was what they were looking at. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration staff members have been ordered to comb their research awards for terms including climate science, climate crisis, clean energy, and pollution. Top officials of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security really received a memo from Secretary Kristi Noem ordering an immediate stop work on everything and anything connected to climate change and the elimination of climate-related terms across the agency. Here's another dot. Coca-Cola says they may have to sell more drinks in plastic bottles in the U.S. if President Donald Trump's tariffs end up making aluminum cans more expensive. The company's chief executive said this in a recent investors meeting. This is in response to the order for 25% import tax on all steel and aluminum entering the United States. It will drive up the price of canned food and drinks in the country. Another dot. Back on February 10th, Trump said, "We're going back to plastic." He then was talking about plastic straws, and he said, "I've had them many times. On occasion, they break. They explode." What I get from this somewhat disparate set of happenings all at once is head-spinning uncertainty. We're not even in a time of business as usual anymore. We've passed into this utter unknown of scaled back or eliminated regulations anywhere they can be found, purged workforce, dismantled systems. We're living in a world where we can't consider climate change as we prepare for it. We can't mention the growing pollution to our biosphere. We can't notice it. We can't study it. We certainly can't make plans and efforts to eliminate it. This mountain has gotten steep.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
You are listening to Talking Trash, our plastic catastrophe. I'm your host, Lois Cordova. So what do you think about the 7 grams of plastic that we're all hauling around in our brains? What do you think about the coming collision of hotter days, flammable toxic building materials, reductions in research and reductions in capacity? I do not have any bright ideas myself about what to do, what directions to go. So by all means, call your representatives daily, express your concerns for our collective safety, all of us everywhere. Our representatives have been busy stern letter writing, and some have been protesting. A handful have been widely educating their public about the on-the-ground impacts that we'll see soon and longer term. I think we need more of that last. We need the broad and maybe loud impact type of education. Tell everybody, what's going on, how it spills out down the line. It's not just these words on a paper. These are the things that affect it. My sense is that the general public isn't quite grasping coming fallout yet, and they're certainly not connecting all these dots about how one thing does impact and have to do with another. At least my periodic little forays into mainstream news. I feel like it's more isolated happenings. I realize that I kind of threw a lot at us. Some of it's pretty wowie kazowie. You digest, maybe my words are getting stuck in the plastic in your brain. That's just scary. I wanted to go like find a plastic spoon and pick it up and really, you know, feel it, but I don't have any. Because I found that horrifying. And I think of our, you know, the lifetimes are getting longer. People are, not everybody, but a lot of people are living well into their 80s. Oh, we got a call. Hi, you're live on Talking Trash. What is on your mind? Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Yes,
you're live on Talking Trash.
Pardon?
I said you're live. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is about 6 months ago, I heard a story about a biologist on the Mediterranean who noticed that seagrass was capturing the microplastics, and she found all these like baseball-sized balls of plastic on the beach. And I wondered if you knew anything about the seagrass, because I haven't heard anything since.
I don't remember reading about that, but I am now writing it down, and I'm going to take a look into that. And if I find interesting things, I will bring it to us next month.
Okay. That was my thought, and I'm so enjoying your show, and K-Mud rocks.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, take care.
Thank you so much for listening and for the compliments, and I think we have another caller.
Hello, thank
you. Hi, you're live.
Hello, thank you.
Hi.
Hello, everyone. So this is my notes for the show is David Bloom. Alcohol can be a gas, and which leads to Johnny Appleseed. And where I'm going, if I can, is nowhere to buy no plastic. So good luck, everyone. I love you. Thank you.
Thank you. Buying no plastic is commendable. Every effort helps. It's really difficult. And remember that avoiding it, avoid it as much as you can. But also remember it's in a lot of our carpets and clothing. Watch your clothing. Make sure those are natural fibers. Secondhand natural fibers are even better. So, but all, at this point, the best things that we can do personally is to reduce this occurrence in our lives, in our personal lives, in our environments. So we can reduce our exposure. We cannot entirely eliminate our exposure at this point. It is in our water. It is in our food. It is in our soils. It is in our air. So reduce as much as you can. Talk about our becoming plastic brains, our becoming plastic bodies, our becoming plastic environment, our coming fire season, and that our fires are no longer staying in the forests, and now we're burning our plastic homes and plastic-filled homes. And the increased hazard that brings to us, to anyone in the vicinity. We all breathe that smoke, and we know that smoke goes a long way. And when that smoke is not, it's toxic, even if it's just forest fire. It's amazingly multiple times more toxic when it includes the stuff in homes. We have another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for the show. I really appreciate it. I just want to say, you know, what the Trump crowd is doing is they're using the typical propaganda techniques, like public relations techniques, I suppose, where you throw a whole bunch of stuff, contradictory things, a lot of it, all at once, quantity and, you know, and speed and rapidity. throw that all at us. So it just overwhelms people, and they go, oh, shit, I give up, and then it creates a lot of confusion. Then they can just go on and deliver their message, or people ignore it. And I think it's really important to pay attention. Thanks for your show.
The fire hose technique. Yes, we are experiencing that. So, put on your goggles and put on your mask, and let's keep wading through this. There are our legal teams fighting at every moment. So much of this, it's wild how much is being tossed out at once. And I'm glad you brought that up, because the overwhelm is pretty pervasive. I don't think I've talked to anyone at all in the last few weeks that hasn't expressed varying degrees of overwhelm. I had a housemate that came into my room and plunked down and just screamed. That was what she needed to do. She just needed to scream. So I don't think I blame anyone for that at all. My head was spinning trying to pull out some of the things that, what bits and pieces of this can have immediate impacts. And since I am also obliquely part of the fire and emergency response community, the other hat I wear is I work with watch duty. So I pay a lot of close attention to fires and what happens with them and how they move and all of those good things. And so I read a lot about, I still am reading a lot about the Los Angeles fires and the way those processes are going along. So of course, when this fire hose of craziness began, just a few days later, I've been hard to sort. Hi, we've got another caller. Welcome.
I grew up in L.A., Los Angeles. And friends of mine, I were devastated by that Palisades fire. And that it's still happening. Still on the whole planet.
Yep. We've got these little moments of winter storm re-preview, but it's not. It's like we said, now they've got the debris flows. Got those going on.
Yeah, I know. I was actually reading something about the whole plastic thing that is still, in our lungs and blood.
Yep.
Hey, I bet, scientific background and blah, blah, blah. And that I'm so glad that your radio show is happening. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. That made me think about back when we very first started the show back in the 2010s somewhere, one of our guests was from Plastic Pollution Coalition. And she'd had their team scour around. And at that time, we were the absolutely only media show that dealt with explicitly with plastic pollution.
It's it really is.
It's mentioned on other shows.
Yeah,
there's specials.
Yeah.
There's documentaries.
Reading today about the microplastic stuff that just pollutes our body.
That's what's getting us.
Yeah.
It's the old plastic that breaks down.
Oh, yeah. It's still there. It's still there, That gets in the water. You might have filters, but it still gets in the water.
It's too small, and most of the water filters and filtration systems that we have are not made to filter out microplastics.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're so invasive.
So that's another reason to not use synthetic clothes. Because every time you wash them, pieces of them, those microfibers go into the water.
Isn't that something, though? Because, a snow skier and I had a whole bunch of stuff. I don't wash them very often, but I went, all right. Because I realized they fall apart.
Yeah, that's another tendency of them. And so, yeah, then they become garbage and we can't recycle them. We can't. You can put your jeans in the compost pile. You cannot put your synthetic shirt in the compost pile. I mean, you
I'm
can, but
aware
it
of
won't
that. I'm
compost.
aware of that. All right. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. Thank you for thinking about it.
My pleasure.
So one of the things I think I'm finding, oh, so I think what I'm worried about, all the suspensions stopping, not even starting, all the funds is a lot of the research projects, and that a lot of those were on plastics and how they pertain to our health, the health of the environments, to our critters live in those environments, and all those, just all of our systems. There's so much research that has just stopped. And this is some of the stuff that we need to know to go forward, to plan and to move. I just find that this research being gone, I find it shocking. And a lot of it is directly or indirectly been coming from the federal government. So it's not stopping all research, but it is sure stopping a lot of it. And it's slowing down a lot of things, us finding out the stuff that we don't know. You know, every single study I've brought to you, they always conclude with the more questions that it brings up, and future research needs to be done on. And that's how we build our world of knowledge, is continuing to research and continuing to learn. And we can't manage our lives or know what's best to do without knowing what impacts are of everything. So I feel like this is just stunning inside and out. I don't think I've quite digested that one yet. And the more researchers that I see saying, oh, this has been stopped, or oh no, the application I just put in for this grant's gonna die because it's called three of the redacted words, you know, and the whole thing is built on all of those redacted words. So this is going to be interesting going forward. I'm concerned with my, like, I didn't know that the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers was pretty much entirely in control of these fire cleanup projects. I found that pretty, I guess, alarming, because once again, those are federal entities, and one, they're being gutted, and two, they're kind of being told not to follow any of the old rules. So it's going to be interesting following all this down the line as we discover what really is and is not happening. See, another of the things that the impacts, another of the impacts of the freezes is that so many of those fire mitigation projects, those, you know, the burns that we would be doing this time of year, those are on hold. So communities and forests that would have been protected were we to have been doing those will not be as this coming season comes up. I said we're pretty much losing a year of mitigation efforts with this funding freezes and firing furies occurring right now. So what do you think? Do you know anyone that has been fired? Has your family been affected? I keep thinking how some of this will impact our communities. Is it our turn to burn? We communities all up and down the West Coast are wondering if this year is their turn. And this year is shaping up to be a year that we don't have even the protections that we had last year. We're lucky in California. We've got a really strong CAL FIRE. But we have to remember that I think it's 45% of the entire state is federal lands. That's our forests, our national forests, our national parks, and with some BLM thrown in here and there. So we are not in control of our own environmental management in the state. We are not in control of 36% of our natural environment in this county. And here we sit on our little ledges of population in our little homes with many of us with plastic carpets, with synthetic furniture, with sitting next to our trees in our forest that we can't even manage. I find it a somewhat terrifying situation. As we find it all. I've got a Yosemite story about the cutbacks here. Just a little bit. They've had to rescind a whole bunch of job offers. This is just something from SFGate that popped into my vision here. And they said they're poised to enter the busiest months of the year. Severely short-staffed, they say. The park's day use reservation, which is created to protect the resources, improve the visitor experience and all that good stuff, that appears not likely to return. They said that the Park Service employees, leaders, and other park experts said they all fear for the ecosystems for future generations. They say that they think the whole systems and safety guards that they have put in place are being derailed. They pointed out that 20,000 visitors show up to Yosemite on a daily basis during the big visitor season. And they are using words like catastrophic. I don't know if you remember during that government shutdown a few years ago, there were people that had gone into Joshua Tree and were cutting down the Joshua trees. So I don't know if we're looking at quite that scale of disaster and pillage. We should definitely be braced for some. As I said, call your representatives. Make their phones ring every single day. Fill their inboxes. And say that you want you and your communities to be safe. And they are somewhat restricted, but I feel like they're not being loud enough. Maybe it's because I'm not watching national news. Somebody tell me that watches national news. Are all of the connotations of all these things, do you feel like the normal everyday person has a grasp on all the connotations of what's occurring right now? Or are they just taking all of these things as little discrete events and that it doesn't impact me until it impacts me? Not being able to see the larger picture of the things that impact our communities. Even outside of plastic pollution, even outside of people understanding that our fires are more dangerous when they move into the urban areas. Even outside of them, knowing or not knowing that, do you feel like your everyday Joe Blow walking down the street understands the fullness of what we're facing with all of these freezes and with funding being rescinded and with so much research coming to a halt? I sometimes feel like there's little, what do they call it, bubbles of people that understand, and that we talk to each other in our little bubbles, and that people outside of those bubbles just don't have a clue. And I don't want to feel like I'm in a bubble. I want to feel like my friends and my neighbors and my community understand the impacts of all of this stuff that's going on and the increasing danger that we're being put in, both by the plastics and now by the deregulations of things and by the freezing of funding, by the cessation of the research that tells us more and more and more about what are the things that we're facing. I feel like it's a pretty terrifying situation to be looking out at. And like I said, I feel like I'm in a little bubble. I'm just in this little tiny community of people that understand these same things. So give me a call and tell me that there's somebody out there that understands this too. and that they feel like, I want to know that other people understand. That's one of the reasons why I've stayed away from mainstream TV, but why I've started poking my head in once in a while is to get a grasp on what I'd be hearing if that's all I was hearing. If I'm just popping on the news at 6 o'clock, listening for half an hour and going away. If that's all I'm getting, am I really understanding the fullness of what's going on? I have talked to a couple of relations that don't follow things very closely. They are understanding, but now I'm thinking maybe they're being a little more curious than your the other folks. They live in Berkeley. You know, they're probably a little more aware, even though they don't check in on the news that often themselves. Anyway, I think maybe it is time to give it a wrap for the night. I think I would like to thank you all for your time listening to me babble and be a little bit scary about the world we're living in. I hope you've been learning something, both the things I've been sort of reporting on as well as my musings. I'd like to thank KMUD, particularly through the airwaves. Oh, and listeners, you can pitch in to keep us on the air, because you got to realize that they're cutting everything, the government, and that they might try to go after these airwaves too. So now's a really good time to do it. And there's a donate button at the top of the KMUD.org page. Now would be a great time to visit over there and throw us whatever you can. Every dollar counts these days. I'd like to thank you callers for keeping me on my toes and helping us think this through tonight. This is your host, Lois Cordova, saying farewell until next time.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.